Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to Dragoncast, home of House of the Dragon. Gather your small council, send out your ravens and call in your bannermen. I'm Hand of the King, Jamie East, here to guide you through the insane world of Westeros and beyond.
Oh, I'm so poorly. Oh, dearie me. In true man flu style, I'm struggling a bit this week, but I'm ably joined by my bear. I'll be the fair maid.
Surely I'm the maiden fair in this.
Well, I didn't want to kind of like, we seem to be slotting into these pretty stereotypical this stereotypical hierarchy. I thought I'd give you the opportunity to be the big bear.
Okay, interesting. I like that. Yeah. Bears come in all shapes and sizes, as we all know.
Do they? I didn't know they do. Do they not? I thought, in homosexuality folklore, I thought bears were always like big men with hairy backs.
Well, yeah, I was referring to the animal kingdom more specifically.
Oh, I see.
Do you know what? This is a detour, but many years ago, I had to go to Svalbard on an assignment, and it's right close to the North Pole, and it's where they filmed some of the Attenborough documentary Blue Planet. They have a research team up there, and Netflix sent me up there to go and meet the team and do some like excursions and have a look around. And
nice.
We saw a polar bear, right?
Wow.
Like 700 meters away. And it was amazing. It was one of the most mind-blowing things I've ever seen. Yeah, and they were like, we were on our skidoos, which are these like sort of snowmobiles. And the instructors and the team were like, look, if it seems to be getting nearer to us, we'll have to start our engines because they don't like the sound of the diesel engines, it scares them away. But luckily, yeah, he goes the other way and he was walking along. They are really skinny polar bears. Like, they're quite long, like long-limbed. So if I was a bear, I think I'd be a polar bear. That's the whole detour of that was just to, yeah.
Oh, nice. I thought polar bears were... I guess it depends what site, whereabouts in the cycle you catch them.
True.
Presumably.
True. Also, where we were, Svalbard, there is like fuck all for them to eat. And one of the ways that the population naturally kind of slims down is that most of them, like, they starve, you know, because there's just nothing there. Anyway, true. We'll do a bonus episode about my trip to Svalbard another time. But yeah, amazing place, amazing part of the world.
You've been on some good trips. I might get sent some good stuff in the post, but you get to go to the places.
Yeah, that was a proper, like, go on. I bought all these M&S thermals because I thought, you know, I have to go and listen, up there, which is like one of the coldest places in the world, they did fuck all.
Oh, really?
I was like double layering. I had like small M&S long johns, and then I got large ones to put on the long johns, and then put trousers on, and then had my like, you have these sort of big puffy jumpsuits that you put on when you're on the snowboard.
And you were still cold.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, that Simpsons meme of radioactive man going, the goggles do nothing. When he's covered in acid, I was like, the thermals aren't working. But yeah, amazing. But
how's your week been?
It's been good. It's been a good week, thank you. Quite busy with work. Got a really quiet week this week, which I'm really looking forward to. I'm going to go to the cinema. Oh, nice. I haven't been to the cinema for ages, and really wanted to see Banshees of Inisherin, but it's already on Disney Plus, so I'm not going to go and watch that.
I know, I already watched it on Disney Plus.
I think I might go and watch Avatar, because Rob, my better half, won't go with me. He just said absolutely not, so I might go by myself.
Life's too short to watch Avatar, surely, Chris.
Well, I've got quite a quiet week, so arguably never been a better time to go. Turn my phone off for 3 hours and watch.
There's just something about it. There's just something about Avatar that just doesn't.
I know. I don't mean, I'm not really that excited about watching it, but it feels like I should see it. You know,
it's like, I don't know. I always look at Avatar. It's like, who's going? Who are these people that are going to see it? No, it's Chris.
But it's
Chris
been.
It's like same people that wear sketches. You know, it's like, who are these people?
Ooh, piping hot tea.
I know that's
this
a bit of a burn, but you know what I mean. It's Woking is my nearest kind of town. Had this huge kind of renovation of like the local like shopping centre, like really nice big M&S, like amazing, like the food hall and stuff.
Nice.
And then next to it was this like literally fucking enormous Skechers store. And I'm just like, who are these people that are buying Skechers? Because I never see them in the wild. You know?
Yeah. They're also not cheap. If you're going to get some trainers, get some nice ones.
I know. We've probably just lost a few listeners now.
Lost the Woking crowd. Lost the Skechers crowd. We've got good arch support, probably, and, you know, no blisters. We're going to talk about I saw you this week, didn't I? We saw each other.
We
in
had a
the
catch
real
up.
World.
Was it this time last week? Was it Monday?
It was Tuesday.
Tuesday.
I didn't say bye to you. I got carried out on.
Yes, hang on a second. I want to talk about this. Sorry. We went to this event, which we should talk about. We'd sit there together all night, stand up with our goodie bags, walk down the stairs at the IMAX, the BFI. Chris immediately says hello to someone else. And just leaves the venue with them. Does not turn back.
You're misremembering this. On the way out, you went. Oh,
I said hello to Elliot. I said
Wayne or something.
No, it was Elliot. It was Elliot. Elliot Gonzalez from I Talk Telly. And I just said, "Hi, Elliot. How are you doing?" Chris just immediately flounced.
It wasn't immediate. It was like being carried away on a very strong current. And next thing I know,
the current that led you all the way, because I left the venue following you, and you walked into the subway, and I was like, oh, okay, it's like that, is it?
Yeah, that sounds quite shifty. We went into the subway because we're at the BFI. Let's tell people where we were. We were at the BFI for a screening of The Last of Us for the first episode. So it's out on the 16th of January, which is the day we're recording. And so it's out this week, so people can probably get involved. And we saw the first episode, and we have some thoughts. I'm quite interested. I didn't play the game. Yeah. You have played the game. It is quite something. The reviews have been amazing. But
I saw a really interesting point that someone made. It was like someone said, now that The Last of Us has had all these rave reviews, do we think that TV executives will now invest in long-form storytelling and behind-the-scenes talent, or just decide to make loads more TV adaptations of video games?
It's an interesting one. I mean, it's a very rare thing, isn't it? A game that works as a TV show.
Yeah, but I think that's because the game is more of a film than a game, really. It's probably, which is why I enjoy playing it so much, is because I'm sure it does rely on skill, but like I'm so shit at gaming. It was like it was the first thing that made me realize I was old and that I was now of a generation that just didn't do this kind of thing. And The Last of Us is actually one of the few games that I've sat and enjoyed because you feel like you're just like you're just part of this film, and actually the bit that you play is actually really, really easy.
That's interesting.
And I think that's what makes it so attractive and so good is because, and we'll talk about it. We might as well talk about it now, actually. It's because the episode, we'll talk about the episode in more detail, I guess, another time, because I think, cross fingers, we're going to have some of the makers of the show come on the podcast, and with any luck, some of the cast as well. But I think the reason it's done so well is because it is almost a shot-by-shot, the first episode anyway, a shot-by-shot remake of maybe the first hour or two of the game. And the game is so cinematic and the storyline is so well written and the characters are already so well developed that I'm not going to say it was a sitting duck. It would have been really difficult to fuck it up, I think.
Yeah.
You get the aesthetic, you get the aesthetic right, you get the casting right. And you're already halfway there. But you'd not played the game. You hadn't really know anything about it. What did you think?
I really enjoyed it. What's interesting for me is there's a sort of almost like a prologue where Joel, who's played by Pedro Pascal, going about his life. Boom, the outbreak happens, and then we sort of skip to 20 years later. Now, my thing is, I'd kind of like to watch the society collapse gradually over like 5 seasons rather than let's just skip to the bit where there's like everything's fucked permanently, you know? Yeah. And I think for me, I was kind of like, oh, I would actually love to watch. I think having experienced the pandemic, I would quite like to watch cinematically how it got so bad. I think that's really interesting, but that's not the story they're telling. I think the sort of nihilism that everything is permanently broken is kind of quite hard for me to invest in. Having said that, it looks amazing. The leads in it are great. I thought that, we'll get into it maybe next week, but there is a moment at the end that really, I was like, oh, really sort of hooked me.
Okay.
But I had a lot of questions about do they have electricity? Do they have water? Do they have gas? Like, I couldn't kind of understand quite how it had got so bad. Yeah. And I don't really understand.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, we've seen so many shows and movies that show that World War Z, Walking Dead, The Road is probably The Road's probably the best example of that I've seen. The Cormac McCarthy film adaptation with Viggo Mortensen in it is about as sad as it gets, I think. Who plays his wife in that? It's Charlize Theron.
Of course.
Plays his wife in that, and that to me kind of lent into that, how the slow decline kind of took over and everything. But you know, World Wars, I felt like we'd seen enough of. Oh, what was that? Was that a police car going in the background, or was that a fighter jet? We've seen enough of that kind of stuff. So, but whether or not we're ready for like a whole kind of like 10 episodes about political society breaking down and why can't we get any electricity? I think that would be quite really depressing.
This is not going to be a feel good show, right? I mean, to borrow a lyric from Rihanna and Calvin Harris, is it about finding love in a hopeless place? Because that seems to be what?
I just wondering where that came from. It's like the last song I would have thought about connecting.
Listen, if society is permanently fractured, we're never going back. It's about the thing that I think the show is going to try and do is to show us like moments of humanity, moments of human connection in this like hostile place. That is the only thing to watch, right? Because it can't get any worse. I can't watch.
Like, I think ultimately it gets, ultimately it boils down to, certainly the first season will boil down to Joel learning to love again. And, you know, it would, obviously an event happens that, that would fuck anybody up. All right, it's time to talk about Game of Thrones Season 3, Episode 7, The Bear and the Maiden Fair. Before we start, in case you need a bit of a recap, here is exactly that from our sister podcast previously on. The Wildling party continues south. John bickers with Oral, who tells John he'll never be able to hold on to Ygritte because he doesn't understand her way of life. Later, Oral declares his love to Ygritte, surprisingly, and tries to persuade her that John is still loyal to the Night's Watch. The Starks travel to the Twins for Edmure's wedding to Roslyn Frey, but are delayed by rain. Catelyn fears Walder Frey will see their late arrival as another insult. Later that night, Talisa tells Rob she's pregnant. At Harrenhal, Jaime visits Brienne in her cell before he leaves for King's Landing and swears he will stand by his promise to return the Stark sisters to Catelyn. Before he sets out with Qyburn and Roose Bolton's guard Steelshanks, Jaime asks Roose to tell Rob that the Lannisters send their regards. In King's Landing, Margaery comforts Sansa after her unwanted betrothal to Tyrion. She advises Sansa to make the best of her situation and says that Tyrion may prove to be a good lover given his sexual experience. Tyrion correctly predicts that Shae, the prostitute he's fallen in love with and hidden away, is furious about his future marriage. Tyrion says nothing has to change when he marries and offers to buy Shae a home where she could raise their family. Shae refuses, as she believes Tywin would murder her and their children if he ever learned of their existence, which is probably fair enough. Elsewhere in King's Landing, Tywin asserts his authority over Joffrey and assures his grandson that Daenerys Targaryen is no threat to his rule. On a ship in Blackwater Bay, Melisandre tells Gendry that he is Robert Baratheon's bastard. At the Brotherhood Without Banners camp, Arya is furious that Beric sold Gendry to Melisandre and runs away into the woods before being captured by the Hound. In Essos, Daenerys approaches Yunkai, a slaver city of no strategic value to her. Despite this, Daenerys sends a messenger to tell the masters that if they don't free and pay Yunkai's slaves, she will ransack the city. In response, the slavers send Daenerys gold and offer her as many ships for her invasion as she needs, but Daenerys refuses this peace offering. Theon, meanwhile, is released from his restraints by two women who begin to pleasure him. His bliss, however, is interrupted by the arrival of Theon's tormentor, who reveals that he ordered the women to seduce Theon. He then orders his guards to hold Theon down and castrates him. On the road to King's Landing, Qyburn tells Jaime that he lost his maester chain after he experimented on living patients. Jaime also learns that Locke intends to use Brienne for his own amusement. He goes back to rescue her, and she's been thrown in a pit with a bear armed with only a wooden sword. Jaime jumps into the pit to defend Brienne, forcing Steelshanks to shoot the bear to protect the valuable Lannister. Jaime boosts Brienne out of the pit, who then pulls Jaime to safety with seconds to spare. To Locke's fury, Jaime leaves Harrenhal with Brienne at his side. This has been my first duff one, I think. I'm going to have to say it. Out of the rewatch, Season 3, Episode 7, The Bear and Maiden Fair. It's did nothing for me, I have to say. I came out of it feeling pretty underwhelmed. I was like, I think maybe I don't know if there are any better ones that we could have watched, but
what I think is interesting is compared to 4, which we covered last week, and compared to 9, which we're covering next week, this is not an action episode. This is all about, it's checking in with like every character, right? Like every relationship, every sort of, you know, and those can be really hard when this is the point in the show where there's almost too many characters and too many storylines. And I kept thinking, do we need Bran? Really? Do we need to check in with Bran? Yeah. Do we need more of Theon? I mean, we talked about Theon last week, that the whole season 3 depicts things that happen off page to him in the book. Mm. And I do think something that has dated, something that has aged like milk, is like, let's just constantly show him getting tortured. I mean, it just... Yeah. isn't interesting, and it's also, you know, they do undo it quite quickly on the show, like when he has to like you know, he's Reek and he has to be Theon again. I just don't think this has been handled very well. So that is, I think they could have shaved off 8 minutes by losing that.
No, you're right. You are right. Yeah. The only good, I mean, let's pick out the good bits, you know, because there were a few good bits. I thought Tormund was really good. You know, Tormund's what it was good watching it, knowing who sees it through to the end as well. I was like, oh my God, there, Tormund made it all the way through. And, you know, he was a really, really, like, out of the box, like a really good character, like kind of like filler character. What's he like in the books, Tormund?
I actually can't remember.
No, well, there you go. That's probably fair.
But I think he's less funny. I think the humour comes the longer he's around. He gets really, you know.
Have you seen his? He strikes me as like you said, like one of the characters that was expanded because he was played so well.
Yeah.
Did you ever see his audition, Christopher Hivju? I'm probably mispronouncing his name there. The guy that played him was called Christoph. You know, you can go on and see various cast members' auditions.
Yeah.
They really go and check his out, because he came like to it. He had him nailed, and he's exactly the same as he ended up. And he just and he talked about it. He said, "I just wanted to eat something." So he's eating a massive carrot. he's doing his audition piece to camera, but just chewing on like a massive carrot. It's really bizarre. But brilliant, but really, really good. And you can kind of see how
he wears those clothes really well. He wears this battle worn, like, I mean, these guys north of the wall have seen some shit, you know.
But
this episode was written by George R. R. Martin, because he used to write one episode a season.
That's right, yes.
And he wrote this one, and I think it's really telling, because I think there's a lot of stuff that isn't in the... There's a lot of scenes for the show. So, like, the bit with Joffrey and Tywin, like, they don't have point of view chapters. So it's one of those things where that's beautiful to see that relationship explored in, like, a different way. And I think some of the Jon and Ygritte stuff, I don't remember finding them particularly interesting in the books, but I think on the show, there's, like, three scenes with Ygritte and Jon Snow. And it's quite an interesting amount of time. And I think the thing that I would say really is good in this episode is just knowing how fucked that relationship is. And that, like, at first when he's like, John's like defected to the Wildlings, he's like a double agent. And you think, oh no, they're going to invade. Like, oh God, I hope the Night's Watch are okay. And John says in this episode, like, you guys are not organized. You're not trained. You don't have military precision. You're all kind of like shambles. Bandits. Yeah. And it's not going to work. And it was kind of like, I think I didn't remember that the first time. I remember thinking, oh no, what an awful thing to happen to them. But actually what is even worse now watching it is, you know, it's doomed to fail and they're doing it anyway. And she's going to die and he might die. I mean, obviously he doesn't, but I really loved that. There was moments where, you just realize
that's the beauty of a rewatch though, isn't it? The hindsight is like, I don't know how I didn't pick up the signs about the Red Wedding. So I went into this on my first watch completely blind. It was completely bowled over by the Red Wedding. But then obviously you watch this back now and you're just like, my God, of course it's going to end like this. Because they were talking about the Tullys. They were talking about how cross Walder Frey's going to be. And you could see how the relationship between Rob and Catelyn was breaking down over his... I mean, just stupid, marriage, really. You know, considering he's such a tactical king and so brilliant, to throw it away, still be kind of completely throw it all away for love, which is, you know, a very admirable thing to throw it away for, but just not something a true king would do.
So the thing that about Rob in this episode and this storyline is... He is acting like Ned's son, because he initially, when he finds out that Bran and Rickon are dead, he's so grief stricken. Is she called Talia? I think Talia comforts him. Yeah. They sleep together, and then he is so ashamed that he took her virginity and made her a dishonorable woman that he marries her out of duty, which is like
I'd forgotten
quite
that.
Noble, okay. And that's kind of like very like Ned, but it's also noble to the point of like stupidity. Like you have ruined this allegiance, and it sets everything in motion. So yeah, I'm with you. You watch this. Rob in season two is like winning all these battles, and like they really got a good hand. This season, yeah, it all falls apart, and it is happening in real time. Like you keep seeing. I think what we're going to miss, which is a shame because it's a really good moment, is when he beheads one of the Karstarks, who were like one of their big allies. The Karstarks kill a Lannister prisoner that they have. It's like a Lannister cousin or a Lannister half cousin.
Yes.
And Rob is like, you've killed a prisoner, but you've also fucked it for us. And he beheads this Lord Karstark in the rain. It's like amazing. And the Karstarks leave. They sort of quietly back the Boltons. And the Boltons are clearly already turning at this point, right? Like this is happening off screen.
There was a really good moment with Roose Bolton, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Towards the end with Jaime. Yeah. Where Jaime said, give the Lannisters, what was it he said?
Tell Robb Stark, the Lannisters send their regards, I think. It changes in the book and the show, and then, yeah, and then he says, Jaime Lannister says his regards.
Do you think there was like an unseen moment where the Red Wedding was planned there?
I think it's happening throughout season three. Some people think that it happens as soon as Stannis loses at the Blackwater. That's when the Boltons start to realize they need to be with the Lannisters, because the Lannisters have married into the Tyrells. They've got an amazing hold over like grain production, and that the Northerners are just not going to win. But yeah, it's sort of intentionally hard to tell. One thing I thought that was really interesting was when Jaime goes to get Brienne, you know, what's the guy? Locke, who is the sort of rat-faced man that is, chopped off Jaime's hand and so on, because at the time he was one of Roose's men. Jaime says something to him in this episode where he's like, what do you think Roose is going to say when he goes to speak to my father? And I think what I took from this for the first time was Locke knows that the Red Wedding is going to happen. And Jaime's sort of comment says, look, we're actually all on the same, we're all on the same side now. There's no antagonism here. That's what I took from it. And it's the first time I've gone, oh, that's the thing that Locke has kind of gone, right, yeah, I have to do whatever Jaime wants me to do.
That's it. It kind of like you watch it already with this sense of real dread and unease, don't you? I quite enjoyed the Qyburn backstory, I guess.
I forgot that he was introduced. I mean, I can't remember when he's introduced because we're jumping across a bit.
I think we'd seen him a couple of times before, but it was nice to. So he'd been like booted out of like the Maesters.
The Maesters. Yeah.
For
operating for kind on of live like, bodies.
For presumably what we come to know and love him for. Which was already setting in stone, already setting in the stall out for the fact that he can resurrect the dead in some way, shape, or form.
And he's hoping to get back into the Maesters and get back in there and get his glory back. And obviously, he does go on to replace Pycelle. That is something that Jaime kind of said. Oh, you're going to give Archmaester Pycelle a run for his money, and obviously we know that that happens in the end. But I thought his comment was really funny when Jaime said, you know, experimenting on people while they're still alive, that's awful. And he's like, well, yes, I've killed people, but like, how many people have you saved? You know, like I might have saved lives doing this. I thought, yeah, well, you know, you can't make an omelette without breaking a few eggs, can you?
Exactly. I thought it's a tough. The castration scene was pretty grim,
pretty bad. Just
also pretty just bad. Just not particularly well acted.
No,
I thought the whole seduction thing was just weird. It's like
bad.
It's like I wrote down. It's just like, how the hell can any man get it up? Like literally, like an hour out, like 10 seconds after being on some fucking flayed cross.
And weeks. Doesn't matter how attractive.
Doesn't matter how attractive the person doing it to you is, or how long it is since you've seen any action. I think I'd really struggle. I think.
Well, also, I don't think he's washed for like months. It'll be all smelly.
This is my next question. It's like you would not want to put your pieces anywhere near Theon Greyjoy, would you? The stench of these bollocks must have been horrific.
Not even a hand. Not even a hand.
No, not even a hand.
Because you know, they don't have any soap. Yeah, I thought that was weird. I just also, this episode, there was that, those girls being like, oh, I'm getting jealous, my lord, you know, and sort of petting each other. And then Rob's wife, who they've just had sex, and she's like, I'm just going to lie on my front, arch my legs over my bottom, and start writing a letter. Like, I was like, put some fucking clothes on.
I know. You know, it's just like, because it can't be warm.
Well, it's just that thing that they were still doing in season three, which was like, yeah, let's just all walk
around. Rob fully dressed, and her like stark fanny naked on the throw. Yeah, and he was like, "Oh, if you don't put some clothes on, I might have to ravish you again." It's like, mate, come on. It's like, give it 10 minutes. Yeah, be realistic.
Yeah, have a wash. But also, you've got to prepare for all. You know, but do you know what I loved is the thing that he does, where he just very briefly sits at his chair, which has like the map and the pieces, and as if he's going, yeah, if I just move that there, it's like, you are not thinking about that right now. Like, he's just had sex, and he's like, yeah. Like
Charlie Chaplin's great-granddaughter.
Yeah, we're here, they're there. Yeah. So, anyway, enough work, back to shagging.
Yeah.
The Arya, briefly there. I mean, that storyline is another one where it's sort of, God, it just really...
Oh, so she got grabbed by the Hound, didn't she, after
escaping...
from the Brotherhood of
Banners. Because the Brotherhood aren't going to take her to Riverrun anymore. They're going to go... They have to invent reasons for people to move the way they're moving, right? So they're like, we're going to go west and attack some Lannisters. She runs away. The Hound captures her and is like, I'm going to ransom her to the Starks. And obviously, as we know, she ends up conveniently, helpfully just... If she went there earlier, she would have got killed. You know, she kind of gets there... after the fact.
Only seconds after the fact. Doesn't she watch... She watches it happen from the outside, doesn't she? She sees...
I think the Hound knocks her out to stop her watching it, and she sees the wolf head stitched onto Rob's body.
And we'll leave you with that delightful mental image as we have a word from our sponsors.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to Quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
We got Daenerys, a bit of that. I mean, that again, like we talked about her last week, that was a really good episode for her. This is kind of...
Continuity error, I think I saw there.
What's that?
We learned pretty early on that dragons need to char their meat.
Oh my God, you're right.
Before they eat. They can't eat meat unless it's been... Yet in this one, she just throws some raw meat.
Yeah.
And yet in this episode, she threw the meat and they just ate it.
Some chicken.
I thought it was a bit just weird, but there you go.
Obviously, they didn't have any... After season 3, episode 4, they didn't have any budget for CGI flames.
Yeah. Yeah. I just thought it was a bit weird. But yeah, I can't get excited about... To be honest... I think I'm beginning my era of Daenerys boredom, I think.
I liked how much of a prick she was. I think, she was really boring for a while. And I like her being like, thanks for the money. I'm going to keep it and then not give you your end of the bargain. And if you try and get it back, my dragon's going to eat your face. I was like, Yeah, that's really fun. I like that.
I think I just generally just get confused and just, I think it all merges into one, whether it's Karth or Yunkai or Astapor. Marine. Yeah. It's just Astapor. All these places, they look the same. You know, they all have the same kind of outcome where she's freeing the slaves and kind of holding the slave traders to account and taking over the
other thing
armies.
About this is that I thought was a bit silly was that, they're like, look, Yunkai, they have, they're like sex slaves, right? They're like sex workers. That's what the slaves are trained. They're not soldiers. So they were like, just leave it because we're not going to get our army from here. And she says, how many slaves are there? And they go, 200,000. She goes, that's 200,000 more reasons why we should go. If you have like been born into a life where you're like a sex worker and then you're liberated and she's like, here's a spear. I want you to help me invade that city. You'd be like, literally did not teach this at blowjob school. Yeah. Like why
I'll have a go, but I can't say I'm going to be much use. What, you know,
you're like, no, don't put it there. You know, it's just sort of, I think that'd be quite funny. But yeah, it's a funny one because you're sort of like, I get the sentiment that she wants to liberate everyone, but also, what the fuck? It's a difficult season. There's too much, everything's falling into place. Everything's happening slowly. Sansa and Margaery having a 3-minute chat. You know, again, it's like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it doesn't really
see how these guys are. But what I thought was interesting with Margaery here is that she wanted Sansa to marry into her family. Instead, Sansa's marrying Tyrion. And even Margaery was the one that was like, you got to think your way out of this. Like, you got to think of this as like, how do you like protect yourself, look after yourself? She's not like going, oh, yeah, it's shit, isn't it? She's like, he's one of the better Lannisters. Like,
yeah, you could be worse in worse off. Yeah.
And then she goes, you know, men who have been with lots of women are very good in bed. You know, once you've had lots of sex, you get better at sex. And Sansa's like, how do you know about this? And she's like, oh, a man told me.
I've read it in a book.
My friend who goes to another school told me. You don't know her.
A couple of notes. Gwendolyn Christie was still a guest star at this point.
Madness.
Which is, I mean, she went on to become one of the main principal characters and obviously made it to the end. But at this stage, she got guest star, you know, she was thrown in there at the end along with a few, like Mackenzie Crook. It was really weird.
Bizarre. So, she goes on presumably, to be so important in the show.
Yeah, because presumably, like Brienne of Tarth in the books is like a major character, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember when she starts narrating bits, which is usually the signifier of when someone becomes a significant character in some ways. I don't remember, but I suppose it might be down to the fact that you're only in 5 episodes, so there's no point paying you like a flat, you know, we may as well do an episode by episode fee kind of thing.
True.
But I thought what was interesting about all that, Brienne, Jaime, stuff at Harrenhal, is, you know, she is the only daughter of like a fairly important lord, and Jaime was like, I presume you're going to ransom her to get money. And the guy said, look, these guys are all going to die in the winter. There's a war on. Honestly, like, they don't even care about money. Means nothing. Status means nothing. There's no point climbing the career ladder here because, like, we're all going to die. They just think it's actually better that they just watch her get killed by a bear. And I thought, God, yeah, that's how bleak this season is, that some people can't even see in front enough of them to be like, I'm gonna be really strategic. Some people are like, yeah, what good's money? Like, may as well just watch
someone. I've got 6 months left. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I thought that's really, again, like, there's all these things in the background that make you realise, like, the old ways of, like, yeah, business, conducting, strategy, social climbing, going out the window, because they're just like, what's the point? But it's a difficult episode. I would have loved to have... I kind of wish I'd watched the whole season because it is a good season. But I did feel at times with this episode, like, exhausted. Like, just so much going on.
It wasn't very satisfying. Even the end, you know, the set piece of the bear pit just felt like nothing. I remember it being like a big moment the first time I watched it. Just like a bit kind of like, it just kind of jumped down.
It was like, we should end the episode on a big action set piece, but... Yeah, I was watching it thinking, I mean, the CGI was worse than I remember. But I also just thought, like, well, you know, they're not going to get killed, are they? Like, But do you know the significance of the, you know, the Bear and the Maiden Fair is a song. And someone was singing it.
Tell me.
So someone was singing it earlier in the season. I don't think we saw it. But the Bear and the Maiden Fair is about a maiden who, like, wants someone to rescue her. And she thinks it's going to be a beautiful knight in shining armor, and it's a bear. And the bear does rescue her, like, he's a good bear. And it's all about, like, help might come in ways that you don't expect, and you shouldn't wish for the knight. You might get saved, it might just be by a different means. And I thought that was really interesting in so much as... Sansa's been saved from Joffrey, and yet all she's thinking is, he's a bear, he's not a knight. But it's like, no, this guy, you got saved. Like, you're not going to get beaten up by your new husband. There's an interesting. But they do, and then obviously they went, well, it's an episode also about a bear and a maiden fair, kind of Brienne, I guess. But maybe the person that rescued her is not the chivalrous knight she wanted. It's Jaime Lannister, who's a bit of a dick, complicated anti-hero. Oh, that stump looked awful, didn't it?
Oh yeah, what was that? Yeah, put that little cream on top of it. It was a bit.
We said last week they clearly don't have any pseudocreme in here. Well, they clearly fucking do.
Yeah, there was some tincture going on, wasn't there?
Oh, it's one of my favourite ways. Theon had some sort of... I thought it looked like Thai red curry paste put on his wounds. But they were putting something on his wounds as well. So they've obviously developed some ointments.
We had some good emails through this week.
Got some questions. From
Tally Briggs. Thanks, Tally. Tally sent... Actually, Tally's quite enthusiastic. Tally sent 4 emails this week.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind.
So, yeah. Came to the podcast late, but I presume Tally's a female and loving it. Just had to start saying, this was really interesting, and it's going to go way back to season 1, episode 1, first episode. Okay. One of the best moments in season 1, episode 1 is the way Ned treats John in the scene where they find the direwolf pups. Now... Okay. How's this for a theory for you, Chris Mandel? she says, I'm pretty sure Dave and Dan told Sean who John was because he plays it perfectly. Ned's own son, Bran, begs him to keep the pups, and Ned gives him a quick dismissal, insisting they be exterminated out of kindness. But when John speaks up, instead of dismissing the bastard, Ned knows that he's speaking to the rightful king of the Seven Kingdoms. He acquiesces to everything the king just told him to do.
Ooh. I wonder if that's,
It never occurred to me. It's a really, really good piece of insight.
John, it's not that John sways him, but he sort of deferential commands him to John.
So, you know, Ned knows that that is the rightful heir to the Seven Kingdoms. Yeah. And...
That's a really interesting thing to pick up on. Really, I never noticed that. Also, I think the respect he has for John as Ned knows he's not a bastard. That's the big reveal, isn't it? We think, oh, he treats him so kindly considering he's a bastard, but Ned knows his sister was married to Rhaegar in secret, and that John is legitimate. Yeah, that's really interesting. I like that.
Yeah, really good, Tally. Thank you very much. She does also have a message for you, Chris, as well.
Oh, no. Is it bad?
Apologies. No. Apologies to Chris. I think this was from a conversation we had last week, maybe, where we talk about red herrings and useless characters. I think it was me, wasn't it? I said, what is the purpose of Varys? She says, Chris, in the books, there are tons of useless characters and red herrings that George started putting in because he put the answer to the main mystery of the entire story, which was R and L equals J in the middle of the first book, because Ned has the recurring dream of the Tower of Joy. And if you're paying attention, know that the King's Guard's one job is to guard the king. You figure out Rhaegar and Lyanna were married and that Jon is a legit heir to the Seven Kingdoms. So when everyone began to post online, they'd figured it out. George threw in a bunch of side stories and misdirections to throw off the stand. Don't know if that's true. But
there are a lot of... I mean, the thing about the books, you know, books generally, is that you can have supplementary things. And I think when you have something on a TV show, you everyone there has to really be earning their crust, you know? So it's interesting. Yeah. And I think what we'll find later on the show is the way that they have to cut things down. They have to merge things. They have to, you know... I normally can't say who I interviewed, but I actually interviewed Nell Tiger-Free yesterday, who is in the Apple TV show Servant. She played a grown-up Marcella Baratheon, Cersei's daughter, in season 5. Now, we didn't talk about Game of Thrones because I was interviewing her for Servant, which is the Apple TV show she's in. But I thought it was so interesting. I was really looking forward when Marcella is reintroduced in Dawn. I was really excited to know what it would be like for her to interact with, like, Cersei and Tyrion and, like, all the other characters. And obviously she gets killed off quite quickly because the show just hasn't got the capacity to do any... It's like, look, we're barreling towards the end. Yeah, is one of the great shames of an adaptation, is you have to be a bit more lean with what you've got in and characters and things like that.
So, I always found I always found it really interesting when... I think my eldest would often say when we were first watching it, he said, oh... Actually, what's happened to that character? That was in the books. That's a whole different character, but they've merged like storylines from two other characters into someone completely new. Maybe Lady Stoneheart was there were bits, elements of that within someone else, and all of these kind of things. I always it must be such a different. I'd love to speak to someone actually about how they do go on about adapting a sprawling book like that and have to like when do you say? Oh, actually, if we take that. And put that into that character, I'd be really nervous about asking the author. Do you need to ask the author's permission, do you think?
Well, George has an exec produce credit on Game of Thrones, so he was... I think initially he was, like, helping them. Like, if you take this character out, this is how it's going to affect what you're going... You're not thinking into, like, year 3, 4, but this is what's going to happen. And I think eventually, because he had to step away from the show, I think there was a bit less of that. But yeah, I mean, I think generally it depends what the deal that you have with the production company is as the author. Like you might give over creative control or, you know, J.K. Rowling, for example, in the Harry Potter films had final sign off on the script. And that meant that like they can do what they want, but she will say to you like, I'm sorry, that's not really how I envisaged it or that's not going to work or you need this character because in book 7, rah, rah, rah. Very difficult. And I think Game of Thrones mostly succeeds. And I think when, as with this episode, George wrote it, I think it's just interesting to pay attention to what is being put in. I said about Ygritte and Jon, I think that works so much better. I think the Tywin and Joffrey scene is great because even just the way it's shot, where Tywin grows in stature, he climbs the steps to talk to Joffrey. Joffrey starts looking really small.
That was actually the best scene out of the whole episode. Definitely.
And I think it's a real real power move by Tywin to go, do you know what? I'm actually going to have all the meetings in my office because there's no point me walking all the way down to this other part of the castle. And Joffrey's like, well, that's now inconvenient for me. And he's like, rather than like, you can come, he says, we can arrange to have you carried.
Yeah.
Like, it's so emasculating and so... Yeah. Yeah, what a great character Tywin is. Just amazing.
And Charles Dance just had him nailed. Just absolutely had him nailed.
I tell you what we should talk about before the end of the podcast. Since we last recorded, House of the Dragon won a Golden Globe.
Yes, it did. Thank God as well, because it was starting to get a bit bad, I thought. You know, was it the Golden Globes? I mean, for Paddy not even to get nominated was pretty poor,
I thought that was very odd, to be honest. I thought that was odd.
It was
odd.
A bit of a power move, I think. It was really weird.
I thought
In the same way that, you know, Better Call Saul never got a nomination or anything. Yeah. Really bad.
I wondered if Paddy's episode that he would submit was after the deadline, but I don't, you know, because the problem with a lot of award stuff, it's not unlike the Brit Awards, which also did their nominations last week. The cutoff dates are so weird that you're like, something can sneak in, Ed Sheeran and Elton John did this Christmas song in 2021 that is nominated for a Brit this year. And you're just like, okay, I don't understand why. And it must be the same with television. I have to assume Paddy didn't put himself forward, like didn't want to be nominated, because that was the performance that was the thing that got a lot of skeptics back on board with that show. But the speech, I mean, Miguel Sapochnik had his tie off. He clearly thought he was not going to have to get up and do a speech. And then, of course,
how fucking wankered was everybody at the Golden Globes?
I know.
I mean, I'm all for a party, but everyone was trolled. And someone who was there told me that they purposely like mixed the drinks really strong because they wanted everyone to kind of cut loose a little bit because it'd been so long since they'd had a proper Golden Globes. Big shout out to Millie Alcock, who looked like she did. You know, I'm sure absolutely not the case, but looked like she'd certainly had some edibles. Not the case.
Millie, come on the podcast and tell us about your hangover routine.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Like, I would be surprised. I think it's the Oscars. They don't serve booze until after the ceremony or something. Or like the dinner is not till after the awards. It's like really weird.
I hate award ceremonies. I really do.
Do you know what? I would say...
I've been to the Brits once. I go to the Ivan Novello's. I'm lucky enough to be invited to the Ivan Novello's. They're really good fun. But I went to the Brits once.
Is that like a lunch one?
Yeah. Yeah. And you have your lunch first. I went to the Brits
about 4 years ago, and I went with like a car brand for some reason. I don't know why. I got invited, and I said, of course, I'd love to go. So you go in, and it was like, you've got to be there at like 5:15, right? So yeah. I left work early, got there at like 5:20, and I thought, oh my God, I'm going to be like the last one in. And I was like the first person to go into the room. And the woman who was like gets you to your seat was like, okay, so you're table 27. And I thought, 27, that's quite a good one. And we're going further and further back because you come on just off the side of the stage. You go down and down and down. I'm like, am I in like the janitor's closet or something? And true to form, I was the table by the toilet right at the back of the room. Couldn't see a bloody thing. It was really good fun though.
Yeah, they can be good fun, but my God, they just go on for far too long, don't they?
I know you've been at the BAFTAs. I've been to the BAFTAs once. You've been to the BAFTAs, haven't you? The only time I went, I was sat, actually had a really good seat. I was with Netflix for some reason, once again. Just said, if it's a free meal and a chance to talk to some people in a big room, I'm there. So I was so, like, I was like maybe like the eighth row from the front.
Wow.
At the BAFTAs. So that they ran a photo of the crowd on the front page of The Guardian the next day, and you could see me on the front page of The Guardian.
Amazing. Picking your nose.
I was actually looking behind me. Because there were some people that were, like, famous, that were, like, further back.
How weird.
Yeah.
But I think they do mix it up a bit like that, though, don't they? It's just...
That was fun. Anyway, so if any awards bodies are listening, I'm a really good seat filler. I've never got any plans in the evening. I'm a cheap date.
Whereas I, on the other hand, I probably won't come. I'll say I will.
Like, post me the gift bag anyway.
Yeah. Exactly. The gift bags are usually pretty good though, right? You hear about those, like, oh, the Oscars gift bag was worth $750,000. Isn't it all just like weird vouchers for like filler?
Yeah, you get like $2,500 worth of like facial work done or whatever. A Hamptons house, you can have it for the summer and stuff like that. I mean, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, would it?
It wouldn't be the worst. It would be if you lived in fucking Surrey, I tell you that. What do I want to do?
Is this Vajazzle voucher eligible in Crystal Palace? That's where I live.
Can I exchange this that Claire's accessories in Woking? I don't think they do Vajazzles, but I can ask.
Can I get any heat tech with this, please?
I once watched Amy Childs give Lauren Harris a Vajazzle.
Grief.
That was one of the most extraordinary moments of my life. But there we go. I'll leave that. That's my Game of Thrones cliffhanger. So next week is the big one. Thank you.
The big one.
You know, I feel like we had to walk through this one to run to next week. So next week is The Reigns of Castamere, season 3, episode 9, The Red Wedding.
Now, I haven't seen this for a minute, but I will say, when I rewatched it last, I was surprised. It's not as... The end is amazing, and I remember the rest of the episode being quite different, if that makes sense. Like, it's...
Okay.
There's a lot I forgot about it. I'm not saying it's boring, because it's not. There's some really good bits in it. But it's, yeah, it's going to be a really interesting one to discuss, so I'm very much looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And then next week, we'll have to get the voting open for season 4.
Jesus Christ, we're already done with season 3.
What are we going to watch season four? I'm like, what are the good episodes in season 4?
Oh, you're not a fan of season 4, are you?
What I do remember? Actually, episode 10 is amazing, because that's the Hound and Brienne have that amazing fight over Arya.
God, is that where he shatters his thigh or something, doesn't he?
Yeah. She runs off to Braavos. That's the season 4 finale.
Wow. We have, oh my God, yeah.
Also, Joffrey's wedding next season.
Oh, yes.
The purple wedding.
Tommen becomes king. Sansa escapes. We've got, there's the battle against the Wildings, Bran starts having more of those bloody visions, finally meets the three-eyed raven. Daenerys and Meereen and Slaver's Bay.
Yeah, I feel like that's going to be... I think season 4 of Daenerys' storyline is even more boring.
I'll tell you why I've got some affection for season 4, is because it's the first... Season 4, episode 1, was the first season I started on Thronecast.
Yeah.
So I was brought on in between season 3 and season 4. So this was season 4 was when Rachel Parris and I started. Right. So I do have a lot of affection for it.
What we do have that is going to be... I mean, I'm not trying to sway the voting. I believe in the democratic process.
Yeah.
The Red Viper... versus the Mountain.
Oh, fuck, we do, don't we? Oh, come on, guys. Yeah. There's a few good ones.
Do you know what? Now I'm walking back what I said. Season 4's got some big fucking moments in it.
Yeah. If I had to ask for it, I'd want the Joffrey wedding. I'd want the Mountain and the Viper. And...
So that Joffrey gets killed in the second episode.
Which is like a proper power move, isn't it?
Proper power move. But also Tyrion's trial is... Yeah, Tyrion's whole trial is amazing. So I'm going to say more consistent season. Like...
Yeah.
There's a lot of high moments, I think. Okay, wow.
Okay.
Before that, though, we've got to get our bridesmaids' dresses on.
Hello.
Try and catch the bouquet.
We've got a wedding to go to. Lovely stuff. I will. I'll see you there for Hi-Ho Silver Lining.
Can't wait.
Get in touch if you've got anything to let us. If you've got anything to say, then do let us know. Dragoncast@daftdoris.com or go to Twitter, dragoncast_pod. And get in touch. Let us know what you're thinking. Have we got any things wrong? You do like to tell us when we get things wrong. Sorry if we've mistaken things or dithered around. And also, apologies for the shambolic uploading of the OA. I've realised that I've put episodes up on YouTube and not put them up on podcast form. Really sorry about that. I'll get episode 4 up. We'll have episode 5 up next week, and we'll get back up to speed with it.
I think you're just putting them up in a different dimension, right? You're just not currently accessing that dimension in which they are uploaded.
Exactly.
Would that be correct?
Exactly right.
You're welcome.
Chris, it's been a pleasure, as ever. Dracarys.
As always.
If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter @dragoncast_pod or email dragoncast@daftdoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for Dragoncast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside, is very much appreciated. Dragoncast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel, and is a Daft Doris production. Drakaris.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.